rising up back on the street. Did my time, took my chances. I went the distance, now I'm back on my feet. Just a man with the will to survive. And many times it happened too fast. You change your passion for the glory. Don't lose your grip on dreams of the past. You gotta fight to keep them alive. It's the eye of a tiger, dream and a fight, rising up to challenge a rival. The last known survivor starts to pray in the night, watching us all in the eye of the tiger. Face to face, out in the night, hanging tough, staying hungry. Tic-tac, the odds till we take them to the street. We kill with the skill to survive. Yes, it's the eye of the tiger. It's the scream of the fight, rising up to challenge a rival. And it's the last known survivor who stalks in the night, watching us all in the eye.
From high atop the hidden bunker in the Rocky Mountains, it's time for Downrange Radio and your host, Michael Bain.
Hey, 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 how about that? I am your host, Michael Bain, and yes, I'm sitting right here on Downrange Radio in my velvet smoking jacket, sipping an expensive scotch on the rocks and listening to Paul Anka and his cover of the great theme song for Rocky III. Remember back in 1982, Rocky III? Eye of the Tiger by Survivor. And you may not think about this, but that's a song that's been covered by more people than you can ever imagine. Wow. And I think that's absolutely the best version. A genuine sort of a smoky lounge version. Something you might expect in Vegas with Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, covering Eye of the Tiger. Hey, it's the Eye of the Tiger. And yes, this is Downrange Radio. And think of an homage to Mr. T. That's right. That's what got me started on this whole Eye of the Tiger thing. It's Mr. T, an homage to the great, the one, the only Mr. T, who in Rocky III, and that is the greatest movie opening of all time, really. Just the opening, maybe 5 or 6 minutes of it, where that song is played. They play Eye of the Tiger, and it shows Rocky, who, you know, we've been a hero for the last couple of movies. You got Rocky, and he's posing for GQ, and he's signing autographs with little children, and he's appearing on children's shows, where on the other side of the screen, Mr. T, an amazing talent, as Clubber Lang, is pounding up like sides of meat, small children, cars, trucks. He is a bad dog, and you know hard times are coming for Rocky. What on earth got me thinking about Mr. T, right? Well, you know how my head kind of rattles around sometimes, which is why I have not said Downrange Radio is the audio podcast incarnation of Downrange Television, www.downrange.tv, powered by the Outdoor Channel, and brought to you by fine sponsors such as Ruger Firearms, Perry USA, Liberty Safes, and Tactical Solutions. See, I did remember. Anyway, the reason I was thinking about the great, the one and only Mr. T, is there's going to be a remake next year of The A-Team. You remember The A-Team television series? It's sort of like Mercenaries, sort of like Soldier of Fortune Light back in the 80s. And George Peppard was Hannibal, the main guy, and Mr. T, B.A. Baracus, bad attitude, Baracus. He was sort of the enforcer type guy. They had a zillion Mini-14s, you know, with folding stocks, and they shot thousands and thousands of rounds of ammunition. No one was ever hit. Well, it's going to be remade with Liam Neeson as Hannibal. And what's that guy's name? Rampage Jackson. from one of those mixed martial arts fighters, UFC fighters, is going to reprise the Mr. T role. And, you know, I got to say, no matter what he is, no matter how tough a bad dog he is not and can never be the great Mr. T. Because only the great Mr. T understands the eye of the tiger. So, okay. Well, where are we? What are we here for today? Oh, anyway. You know, last week was a great week, an incredible week for our gun rights. The Supreme Court has said that it will consider the case of incorporation of the Second Amendment into state laws, and that's taking on a case in Chicago, which, of course, Chicago continues to ban handguns. This is taking on a case looking at the Chicago law. Now, you kind of get all kind of fuzzy on this incorporation stuff. Basically, all of the Bill of Rights has not yet been incorporated into state law. Most of them have, but some of them, including the second, have not gone through the legal procedure of being of having a major of the Supreme Court, for example, saying that yes, indeed, the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment of the Bill of Rights, does apply to the states. And that's what the Supreme Court is going to be looking at. The case will be argued from our side by Alan Gura, who did such a superb job of arguing Heller. And the NRA, National Rifle Association, referred to this as a monumental case, and I believe that is exactly true. Last year, of course, with Heller, the Supreme Court ruled that the Second Amendment is indeed an individual right. And once again, you know, the Supreme Court talked about self-defense, something that had never been talked about before. So this case goes the next step and says, okay, the Second Amendment is an individual right. And if the Supreme Court rules in our favor, which I think is pretty much a slam dunk, I've seen essentially Brady has run up the flag. Well, they're going to rule. Of course, they're going to rule for incorporation, because what court wouldn't rule for the incorporation of one of the bills of right? Bill of Rights into state law, requiring, you know, mandating states, local municipalities, all of them must abide by the Constitution of the United States. If the Supreme Court rules as we expect the Supreme Court to rule, then what you're going to see is municipalities like Chicago, which has said we don't care what the Constitution says. Our people cannot have guns, and that's why we have a gun-free paradise. The gun-free paradise of Chicago, which, hey, tough break, doggone, loose in those Olympics. You think the pictures of gangs beating to death an honor student with, like, sticks in their hands and clubs, you think that might have had an effect on those guys going, do we want to bring the Olympics to Chicago? There aren't any events that can be competed in body armor. So, hey, tough break, dog. Sorry, Mr. Daley, Mayor Daley, excuse me. But those municipalities, those cities, those states will not be able to pass laws to abridge our right to own firearms. It's not going to wash away every gun law in the book, even if the Supreme Court comes back. It sort of depends on how they come back. And typically, you know, we talked about this with Heller. When the Supreme Court rules, the Supreme Court as a rule, gosh, is that the right construction? In general, the Supremes don't like to wipe the slate clean and do all. They tend to do the minimum they can to clarify the situation. That's been consistent with the Supreme Court. And you saw that in Heller. Heller was not a blanket whacking down of all federal gun laws. So it depends on what the Supreme Court comes back with, and that'll probably be in June 2010. We will be covering the arguments, the oral arguments, same way we did with Heller. Downrange Television will be there. We will have somebody in the courtroom, and we will have that information for you as quickly as we can. That will be coming sometime in the fall, and probably a decision in June. Whatever happens, it's going to be a profound and defining moment for the gun rights movement in America. I feel optimistic. You know, I think that we're going into this one with a lot of momentum behind us from Heller. You know, we've got a court, even though Sotomayor has been obviously affirmed, sits on the court. If I'm not mistaken, she may have to recuse herself on this because of her rulings out of the Second Circuit. I wouldn't swear to that. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on television. But I do feel optimistic going into this. You'll hear about it first on Downrange Television. We'll stay on top of it. When finally we get the arguments, and then we go on to get the ruling later on in next year, we'll have some of the very best analysis available to you. We did that with Heller, and really proud of our coverage of Heller. You can expect it as we go forward on this. Interestingly enough, there was another lawsuit filed last week that may have an equally profound and long-range effect on gun rights in America. The state of Montana went to the U.S. District Court in Missoula to say that their laws trump the firearms laws of the federal government. How can that be? If you remember, a while back, Montana passed legislation that said guns that were made in Montana, kept in Montana, used by Montanans, were exempt from any federal regulation because the federal regulation of firearms has always fallen under the Interstate Commerce Act, which is a catch-all that the federal government uses to regulate virtually everything. Well, also, Texas followed suit, passed similar legislation, and in both cases, the states were informed by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms that that was utter and total nonsense, that firearms manufacturers in Montana making guns for people in Montana were obligated to follow the same federal regulations as everybody else. So the state of Montana has gone to federal court to say that is not the case, that the interstate commerce laws do not apply in this case. And they're very broadly applied. I mean, basically, if you build a gun at home, you decide to build a gun at home, you're obligated to follow rules from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms because it says that even if you build a gun for yourself in your home, it falls under interstate commerce. Not as odorous as some of the rules that firearms manufacturers go to. But in any case, it's interesting because it's a major states' rights issue. And if the federal court rules in favor of Montana, again, you're going to see a sea change in the way firearms are dealt with on the national stage. It's going to be very interesting, very interesting. The Second Amendment Foundation joined in with the lawsuit, said it hopes to ultimately win a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that limits the application and reach of federal rules over state businesses. This is a major states' rights issue. The suit is challenging the right of the federal government to oversee gun sales under the guise of interstate commerce regulation. So, that's going to be a major, major law. It's something, you know, going to be a major change if the feds uphold it. Of course, no matter what happens, that will end up with the Supreme Court as well. And depending on what happens with the Supreme Court, you never know. You never know. We certainly have an administration in Washington who would love to pack the court with more activist judges who probably haven't ever read the Constitution of the United States. So we won't go there, but we'll see. It's good on the state of Montana, good on the Second Amendment Foundation, always standing up for all of us. So a lot of legal things happening, and you know what's the oddest thing to me is after all those years of the Republicans, ostensibly our friends, the Republicans, in complete power in Washington, we got nothing. You know, the best we got was that you know, we did get the preemption bill, and we did not see a renewal of the assault weapons ban, of the Clinton ban. And other than that, all those years, all those opportunities to step up and work for gun rights, and no one did it. And now with the most anti-gun administration in history in Washington, we are moving ahead on many, many legal fronts, and we're seeing victory after victory. I think that's a wonderful thing, and I'm very proud of those that are leading that fight. So anyway, hang on 1 second. Let's get in a plug for the Outdoor Channel. As you know, For Whom I Labor, every Wednesday night at the Range, which is brought to you by Midway USA. And of course, you see Shooting Gallery, a show that I host and love dearly. We're actually in our 9th season. We're just finishing filming up our 10th season. Cowboys with super host Tupelo Flash. I think we just started repeats of this new season. Best Defense Survival, we're in repeat. We're actually working on the Best Defense Season 2. That's how come I'm generally, there's the 2 months of the year where I'm busiest filming are June and October. So I'm right in the middle of major filming on Best Defense, and it's going great. The stuff that we are filming for Best Defense is a quantum leap above the material you saw this year, which is, I think, some of the best stuff ever on television. So hang on. Let's say a good on you to the Outdoor Channel, and we'll be right back.
Like the shooting sports? Like to see the newest firearms before anyone else? Then there's only one place to be on Wednesday nights. Outdoor Channel, America's leader in outdoor TV.
Other than on the legal front, what else is going on in the wonderful world of firearms this week? Well, I think we're seeing some changes once again in the overall AR market. You know, the bubble went up around April, May. The bubble popped. We started seeing AR sales declining. For the first time, ARs were on the shelves. You could get ARs. We're now starting to see the same deals as before the great Obama gun run. So we're seeing $800, $900 ARs available all over the place, even at your local firearms store. And one other sign that the market is returning to some level of normalcy is that new products are once again starting to become available. Last week, we heard Smith & Wesson say that they're going to go to a gas piston gun and also offer some upgraded versions of their own AR-15, that M&P-15. And Stag Arms, of course, a major sponsor for me of Shooting Gallery. That's, in all honesty, there it is, major sponsor. But build some of the finest ARs that you can get in the country. They announced the availability of their own gas piston gun, the Model 8. They'll be taking orders for the 1st of December delivery for the Model 8. And the really most compelling thing about the Model 8 is its price. Both right-hand and left-hand versions of the Stag Model 8 gas piston gun will be available for under $1,200. And this comes in the wake of CMMG in Missouri. As you know, CMMG is a manufacturer of numerous AR parts, very well-known, very well-respected manufacturer. Their announcement that their basic gas piston gun, their gas piston AR clone, would be available for under $1,000. Why is this important? We've seen, with all the gas piston guns that come on the market, we've seen a very high price point against them, whether it's Sig 5.56 or the Ruger, the SR-556, a superb rifle, shot a lot of rounds through it. Any of the gas piston varieties of the gun were maybe $1,000 more, $800 to $1,200 more than an equivalent AR. And you've heard me say it here before. I've not run crazily to join the gas piston craze because I'm not going to Afghanistan. Are gas piston guns more reliable than an AR? Well, sort of, yes. Obviously, the gas piston system, like on an AK, is a cleaner, more reliable, you know, in the generic sense, system than the regular AR, which is pumping gas back into the chamber. So you get carbon buildup and dirt and all sorts of stuff like that. However, again, the point that I've made in the past and I'd make right now is that the AR system is a refined, mature system. So even though there are disadvantages to the way it handles gas and the way it handles its recoiling, we know how to make it work, and we know how to keep making it work. So if you were asking me before, if you were saying, hey, Michael, you know, I'm just getting ready to buy an AR, and I have a choice of a really good AR for $1,000 or a really good gas piston AR for $2,000. What do you think I should get? My response is going to get the basic AR. Get a good AR and understand that you got to keep, there's certain points where you got to keep it clean, blah, blah. However, that equation changes if you have almost a parity between the regular AR system and a gas piston system. If you can get a regular AR for $900 and a gas piston AR for a couple hundred dollars more, then I'm going to say go with the gas piston system. That also works really well. Hey, so that's going to change the equation. I don't know yet. I don't know if it's been announced or not. It certainly hasn't been announced to me what the MSRP on the Smith & Wesson guns are going to be. But with Stag and CMMG coming out and essentially driving a stake in the ground and saying a gas piston gun really shouldn't cost huge amounts more than a standard AR, I think it's going to see some changes in the market there. I think the prices are going to come down. You all know, I think we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that SIG is also doing their own AR. Apparently the SIG 5.56 has never delivered the kind of sales that SIG anticipated with it. And I think it's a wonderful gun. A little heavy, a little heavier than it should be, but especially with the changes that brought it closer to the 5.51 in the way it looked in some of the stocks, things like that, I think that the 5.56 is a superb rifle, but it was expensive, it was heavy. So now you see SIG going back to the AR well with their own gas piston type AR. But again, I think we're going to start seeing the baseline thinking of that. Well, a cheapo AR with a gas piston system is going to be about $1,000. A cheapo AR without a gas piston system is going to be about $800. So a lot of things changing in that market. Worth watching, absolutely worth watching. I think, what else is new? What else is going on? Well, from my own standpoint, you know, as you always know, I'm happy as a little puppy when something nice comes in the mail, especially when something comes home. And da-da, my retro para, my para GI Expert that has been dinked to look more like a 1911 A1 World War II variety gun has come home from Cylinder and Slide Shop. And as usual, it is breathtakingly good. Bill Loffrich at Cylinder and Slide, of course, is the, you know, the, it's hard to, you can't say the, but if you're to say top five 1911 mechanics in the country, and you would put them all on par, and Bill Loffrich would be one of those five. Bill Wilson would be another one of those five. Wayne Novak would be another. Anyway, you know how that goes. So, Les Bear, hi Les. But it's a great little gun. What I wanted to do, the GI Expert, the Para GI Expert, it's a pretty good little gun in its own right. It's inexpensive. You get into the 1911 platform for $600 with a solid gun. You know, it's going to work for you. And there's a bunch of guns in that, in the what I think of as the commodity end of the 1911 business, of course. The Para GI Expert, the STI Spartan, the Taurus 1911, nice gun, the one that I have, excellent gun. And I know of several other ones out there, people very happy with them. The basic mil-spec Springfield Armory, all these guns, even the Rock Island Armory, which is dirt cheap, gun from the Philippines. I got one. I paid the MSRP of, I think, what, $329 or some kind of ludicrous MSRP on the gun. And darned if it doesn't work every time. How odd. In fact, I shot one of Alan Samuel, my friend Alan Samuel. You've seen him a lot on Shooting Gallery. He turned up at a match with a Rock Island Armory out of the box 1911. And Alan has more custom guns certainly than I have. And everybody was like, why are you doing this? And he goes, I want to show you that you can shoot matches with the 1911 and not have to spend a fortune. He goes, I got $389 in this gun, and it works great. So I got the GI Expert. I had a little issue with it. Went back to Para, came back with a new hammer and sear. But I shot the gun. I liked it. I liked the way it shot. It was, as I said before, out of the box, it was one of the more accurate 1911s that's ever crossed my desk. It shot superbly, 230-grain ball. But I wanted to shoot it in the SAS Wild Bunch matches. Those are, of course, matches built around the guns used in the classic Sam Peckinpah movie, The Wild Bunch. So 1911 Winchester 97 trench guns. Gosh, with that like heat shield on it, too cool. And major caliber lever guns, so 44, 44, 40, 38, 40, 45 Colt lever guns. Notice I didn't say long Colt. I almost did. I hesitated. Colt. But I still shoot in modern class. There's two classes in Wild Bunch shooting, modern and traditional. Traditional, you shoot one-handed, and there's a limited number of changes you can make to the 1911. But I'm always going to shoot two-handed because that's kind of the school I came up in. So even though I was in modern class, and even though, you know, virtually every accessory or change or modern iteration of the 1911 is okay in modern class, I really wanted my Wild Bunch gun to look more like the Wild Bunch gun in the Wild Bunch, the gun they were actually using. So I fiddled around. I fished out a lot of cheap parts. I mean, that's one good thing about this is you're not talking about buying really expensive custom parts. Instead, you're going back trying to find old parts, a steel rounded mainspring housing fitted with a lanyard ring. I never did find a trigger. I wanted a steel trigger like were used in World War II on 1911s, and there just weren't any around. So I did my one, this is my one gamey thing, is I love STI triggers. And on most of my trick 1911s, if I've specified trigger, I always specify an STI trigger. So I got the short STI trigger because with a rounded mainspring housing, that was designed for the short trigger as opposed to the flat mainspring housing that we typically now see that we use with a longer trigger. So I got a short STI trigger for the rounded mainspring housing. I also couldn't find a little nubby safety. I have my father's 1911 A1 Remington Rand, and I wanted the Para to look as much like the Remington Rand as I could. And since it you know, I needed that safety, that little rounded nub safety. So what I asked was for the guys at CNS to match the current pair of safety, regrind it, refinish it, and match it to World War II specs, which they did superbly. And in terms of a hammer, the GI Expert, of course, has the Commander hammer, which is almost a standard now. It's so odd, you know, things so change. A lot of people with big fat hands, okay, I'll absolutely say this is true. People with great big fleshy hands, if, you know, if you've got a hand like Mr. T that looks a lot like a Hormel ham, then when you grab the 1911, if it had the normal spur hammer, sometimes that hammer could bite you, which is the genesis of all the beaver tail grip safeties and the use of the round Commander hammer instead of the spur hammer. Well, I have little girly man hands. I don't have Mr. T hands. And so I never had any issue with that. With a standard 1911 with a spur hammer, it never once bit me. So what I asked Bill Lawfridge to do was he makes a drop-in trigger kit. And many, many great gunsmiths out there, rather than now do their own trigger jobs, they just buy the CNS product. Because, again, it's a debug product, the drop-in trigger kits. But they made one with a spur hammer for people who preferred that. So basically we have a cylinder and slide drop-in trigger job with a spur hammer. And then probably the hardest thing I asked them to do, and they actually called me on this and wanted to make sure I hadn't lost my mind, but I said, would you mind stripping off the Para's hard, modern, slick finish and parkerizing it for me? Just parkerize the gun, which they did. And what came back is a really, and I had some other things. Okay, you send a gun to a custom gunsmith, and you think, all right, what am I going to do? As long as it's there, you know, bring me back a gun like I like. Bring, you know, they've built a number of 45s for me, of 1911s for me. They know what I like. You know, I've spent time in the shop. We filmed at the shop. Bill Lawfridge is a really, really good friend of mine, even though he did once say in print that I should be banned by federal law from owning a Dremel tool. But I said, you know what I like. You know what I like in a gun, so let's make sure the gun comes back like that. And it is a wonderful gun. It is a one-hole group 230 grain ball gun. It looks absolutely old. It looks like a retro gun, which is so neat about it. I mean, it looks the part, and yet it shoots as good as any of the custom 1911s I have in my safe. So thank you Bill. This gun's going to get its coming out party. I guess that's what debutantes have. It's kind of a debutante gun. It's going to have its coming out party at Winter Range up in Phoenix in I think February. That's the Cowboy National Championships, and there's a major Wild Bunch match before the Cowboys shoot their national championships. I'll be up there. I will be shooting the entire match, and I'll be shooting it with the Para GI Expert and my old Chinese trench gun that briefly, I forget, one of the Chinese manufacturers made a version of the trench gun. Winchester Model 97 clone trench gun, and even mine's been overhauled enough to make it work. They were not perhaps the most reliable guns ever made, the first like sweep of Chinese copies, and a Legacy Arms 44 Magnum carbine. I have one that was made in Brazil. I have another one on the way that Legacy wanted me to take a look at. That's one of Legacy Sports basically brings in a whole lot of different really great guns, cowboy guns, modern guns, whatever. But Legacy is now on their Winchester Model 92 clones. They're bringing in Chiappa guns from Italy. My friend Ron Norton at Chiappa, an altogether good guy, good friend of mine. They said, you know, Ron said, the least you could do is take a look at my guns before you go out and use your existing 44 Magnum carbine, which is, again, a debug gun. It was a Legacy gun made by Puma, Legacy gun made in Brazil, rebuilt by Steve at Steve's Guns, Steve Young at Steve Guns. Nate Kyle with Jones is his cowboy alias. So I'm going to look at that 44 Magnum that comes in, which hopefully will be in the next few weeks, and make a decision on that. And but anyway, I'm looking forward to shooting the match. You know, I've been on a roll match wise. I've managed to shoot the last two cowboy matches I've shot them clean. That is, there are no misses, and I shot them moderately fast. And so, what I wanted to do is get to a point where I was 100% sure on delivering the shot, and then work to speed myself up. And we're going to talk about that a little more, how that works, a little more when we come back from this commercial from Crimson Trace Lasers. My friends at Crimson Trace, hang on, we will be right back.
I've been on the local police force for 10 years now. I've stayed away from different gadgets and gimmicks that were supposed to improve my shooting. A few months ago, when I was at the range, another officer was using Crimson Trace laser grips. I have to say, I was pretty skeptical at first. Well, he let me shoot his gun, and I couldn't believe how fast and accurately I could hit the target, even in unconventional positions. At that point, I became a true believer and bought a set for myself. They were simple to install and easy to use. Crimson Trace laser grips are not a cure-all, but when my life depends on it, that red dot clearly identifies my point of aim, especially in low light conditions when most shootings occur. You could say it helps bad guys make informed decisions.
Get to your favorite gun shop and try a set today. Or contact Crimson Trace for a free catalog at the location of a dealer near you. Call 800-442-2406 or visit their website at crimsontrace.com.
Downrange Radio, powered by the Outdoor Channel, is brought to you by our great sponsors at Downrange Television. Parrot USA, makers of fine 1911s, as we've been discussing. Ruger Firearms, Liberty Safes, America's number one safe manufacturer. And Tactical Solutions, makers of great 22 solutions for you to allow you to shoot more, cost less. Ah, isn't that cool? Okay. Anyway, I was talking about the way that I've approached competition shooting, and it's not the way young guys, you know, or young women, say Jessica Abbott or Randy Rogers or any of those are great shooters. It's not necessarily the way they approach competition. When I got started in competition, we always worked based on that classic line, I believe by Wyatt Earp, which is that speed is fine, accuracy is final. That was always our basic thing, because I came out of quote unquote combat shooting in the old days, where what we were looking to see is what is the best tool to use in real world scenarios. We had not yet built the sport up, and so our whole thinking was that no matter what, you delivered the shot. You know, if it took you a slight bit slower to deliver the shot, you had to make sure that it was the shot. It was the stopping shot. And then as our accuracy was in place, then we moved forward on our speed until we could deliver the shot quickly. And that does that work? Yes, that works. Absolutely. It's a fine way to train. But starting, I guess, in the late 80s, early 90s, or somewhere in there, some of the younger shooters, really brilliant shooters, one that comes to mind who started a lot later than that is, say, somebody like Casey Asubio or J.J. Ricazza, any of those like Steel Challenge shooters, they approached it with a different view. And you saw this in USPSA as well. And their view was shoot real quick and eventually your accuracy will follow. So they're very, very fast shooters. Every way that they came up through is, and you can see a difference in style. You know, it's interesting is you know, I've seen somebody like a Mike Dalton, one of the very, maybe the first Southwest Pistol League combat master back in the 70s, mid and late 70s. You know, one of the guys who really founded the sport of practical shooting. You know, I've seen Mike shoot alongside Casey Asubio, and you can clearly see the difference in style. You know, Mike is very fast, but Mike came from accuracy. Casey came from speed and is now super accurate, and of course on the U.S. Army Marksmanship Unit for a while. But I'm always going to default to the accuracy first. Why would I do that? Well, I think that, and again here, maybe I date myself. So Casey or JJ, you know, JJ who is a Fed now, you know, God help anybody who ever comes up against J.J. Ricazza. He's one of the fastest human beings I've ever seen. But I always, in my instruction, when I'm teaching people, when I'm talking to people about shooting, I'm always going to default to having to be able to deliver the shot first. First, I want to know that you can hit the target. And then I want to know that you can hit the target every single time. When I say, I need you to shoot, bang, I need to know that you can deliver that shot. Why? Because in a real-world situation, you're going to need to deliver the shot. And yes, you can argue with me, well, you got to be fast, you got to do this. All those things are true. But if you're super fast and fail to deliver the shot, you still get to die. Whereas maybe, just maybe, if you're a speck slower and you deliver the shot, then you don't get to die. You get to live. You get to carry on. So you're never going to get me beyond that speed is fine, but accuracy is final. And from my own standpoint, as you know, I've kind of gone through learning to shoot with my left eye, lots of things like that. As a competitor, and I intentionally this year, we've talked about it before, I went into cowboy action shooting with the intent of being a real competitor. Maybe I'm never going to get to the top. I don't think I am. Maybe running short of years here. But I wanted to focus on the competition and be a good competitor. And that means that in my head, I needed to know I had the ability to deliver the shot on command. And the way I would tell myself I could deliver the shot on command is if I could shoot a match relatively fast and clean, not miss anything, then in my head I know it's there. I know the shot is there when I need to pull the trigger. So, you know, shot the last couple of matches clean, so that allows me now to speed up. So what I've done is I've created a baseline for myself. I know what this baseline is. I can shoot X stage in X times and guarantee that I can get the hit. Now, what can I do to move myself up speed-wise? How can I increase my speed? And in cowboy action shooting, interestingly enough, as in life, a lot of times the things we think will increase the speed don't increase the speed. As a long time, 15, 20 year IPSC competitor, we shot splits quick. That is, we were able to pull a trigger quick. But shrinking the time between shots really wasn't the major thing that increased our speed. Rather, looking at IPSC and looking at any competition, cowboy shooting, IPSC, whatever you want to say, key point was, number one, get to the gun quick. That's not, say, a fast draw. Your draw needs to be smooth. Smooth is always fast. Smooth, being smooth, is the largest component of being fast. So if you train yourself to be smooth, you will be fast. But get to the gun quickly. Now, it's interesting, if I watch people in competition, I can say cowboy competition because that's what I've been focusing on this year, is you'll see people glacially moving to their gun, really slowly. They have to draw the gun, and you're thinking, what is taking them so long? Well, it's another one of those monkey things. We're always talking about monkey things. Monkey do, monkey do. What is it that primates do? And because we think linearly, when we say practice your draw slowly, then every motion is real slow. What we really mean to say is do the things that you can do quickly, quickly. You don't need to practice getting your hand to your gun in the holster slowly. You know why? Because that's something monkeys can do. You got a thing on your hip. Right now, reach down with your right hand, touch your hip. Wow! Monkeys do that well. What we mean is the things that are fine motor skills, you need to practice those slowly. But you need to do everything you can do quickly, quickly. Get your hand to your gun. Whoop! Quick like bunny. Make sure you got a good grip. Practice quickly going to your guns, quick as you can. So, and you need to expand that into the whole way you look at competition. And that's kind of what I'm doing now with cowboy action shooting. Looking at transitions. How is it that I transition from this gun to that gun? We'll talk about that a little bit more in a later show. But I wanted to make a point that we need to do this with our self-defense training as well. One of the things that I feel really strongly about is that whenever you can do so unobtrusively, get to the gun quick. If the gun is in your pocket, and this happened to me last week, I've got Ruger LCP in my pocket. I'm in a situation where I go like, oh, man, I feel creepy. Put my hand in my pocket. Nothing is more common than having your hand in your pocket. My right hand goes into the pocket. I get a good grip on the gun. With my forefinger, my right forefinger, the trigger finger, I reach down and bump the carry holster in my pocket, the DeSantis Nemesis holster that I typically carry pocket pistols in, bump it so that I've now freed the friction of the pocket gun in the holster. I can now make a very quick presentation. And you know what? No one was the wiser. No one said, oh, look at that. We've talked about that before. Get to the gun quicker whenever you can. Practice getting to the gun quickly. So, gosh. Well, we're kind of at the end of the show, but there's just a couple of other things I wanted to mention to you in passing here that were kind of neato. But anyway, that's my advice for the week, okay? We're talking about get to the gun quickly. But I found some really interesting art. I mean, that's kind of a non sequitur here, isn't it? This isn't exactly an art criticism show. If you want that, you can go to my friend Dave Hickey down there in Austin. You know, he's a famous art critic. He used to be a famous music critic. I could tell you stories. There's such stories about Dave Hickey, but now that he's a famous art critic, we won't talk about them. But I will say nothing is funnier than hearing, being on the end of the phone in New York City and hearing Dave Hickey being carried out of LAX by security personnel screaming, "You promised you'd rent me a car." I can't help it if he didn't have a credit card. Anyway, I found a great piece, interesting artist, Chris Hausbeck, H-A-U-S-B-E-C-K, so Hausbeck. He takes guns that have been seized by various and sundry attorney generals and turns them into art pieces. And especially, they appear to be weird steampunk type guns. Looks like something that would be used in the TV series Firefly. And I've got a link there. Of course, everything you hear about on Downrange Radio, we got a link on Downrange TV. Go check out the link to his Flickr page and look at some of those guns. They are incredible. I am going to get one of those guns. They're not really guns, but the art piece. That thing would look great hanging in my office here at the secret hidden bunker in the Rocky Mountains. So I check out that art. It's interesting stuff. One other thing I wanted to mention before we head out of here is I have the new reader's copy, the new advanced copy for Stephen Hunter's newest book, I, Sniper. And oh, darn, I started reading it last night and it rocks. We're going to be talking about, I'm going to post maybe like a few paragraphs from it on the blog, on the Michael Bain blog. And yes, if I haven't insulted you this week, don't worry. I'm coming for you. So you can just kind of get a sense for it. But it's the new Bob Lee Swagger novel, I, Sniper. I love it to death. Interesting note on the back said that Malcolm Gladwell, of course, the guy we've talked about extensively here from the Tipping Point Theory and Blink on how fast we're able to game the situation. We've talked about Malcolm Gladwell's work a lot. Says that Stephen Hunter's last book, which was that great Night of Thunder. Remember we played Thunder Road and talked about the book? Was his absolute favorite thriller for the year. And so it's good to know Stephen Hunter has high-end fans, at least higher end than me. But I wanted to read you his introduction to the book. And it's a wonderful introduction, and let me just read it to you, and you'll see why I wanted to tell you. It's because this book is dedicated to the American writers who have provided me with so much education, illumination, insight, enjoyment, and delight over the past 25 very good years, with apologies to the many I've left out. Michael Bain, Masad Ayoub, Jan Liberell, Rick Hacker, David Fortier, Chuck Taylor, Peter Kukalis, Wiley Clapp, Don Cates, Sam Fadala, Patrick Sweeney, Craig Boddington, Barrett Tillman, Dwayne Thomas, Lane Simpson, Gary James, Walt Rausch, John Feimster, John L. Plaster, Frank James, Roy Huntington, Charles Cutshaw, Gary Paul Johnson, Mike Venturino, John Barnes, Leroy Thompson, Dan Shea, Frank Imanico, Jacob Gottfried, Dave Anderson, John Taffin, Hote Boddington, Greg Gengosa, Rick Jameson, Wayne Van Zoll, Terry Weiland, Clint Smith, Gene Rodriguez, and the late Chuck Carwin and the late Robert Schimmick. Steve, thank you. Stephen, thank you so much. I'm honored to be included on that list. And, you know, I have to say, I read that list last night, and I thought, of all those guys there, of all the great times I've spent with so many of them, sharing lies, swapping lies, hanging out at events, hanging out in odd places in the country, and sometimes other countries, swapping adult beverages and strange stories, shooting alongside of. You could not ask for a greater bunch of people. And so, Steve, thank you so much for honoring these great gun writers and including me in that list. And we're going to be talking more about, of course, I, Sniper. We plan to do a major launch of I, Sniper when the book becomes available. We'll have Steve Hunter right here, of course, on Downrange. And I'm sure we can talk Steve out of some autographed books to give away. But that's coming up, as always. So, anyway, thank you always for joining us. Thank you for being here on Downrange Radio. Thanks for you giving me something to do during the week. And until next week, even if you're using an AR that is not a gas piston gun, I'm going to say, be safe out there. And hey, listen, we got more Eye of the Tiger. This, though, is sort of a strange hippie version from Leslie Nuss, kind of a great folk singer. How many Eye of the Tigers can there be? Hey, stay safe out there. I'm Michael Bain. We will talk to you next week.
And the last known survivor stalks a spray in the night, and his fortune must always be of the tiger. Thriller.